Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
It is that time. Welcome to the No Romance Without Finance show. I am one of your hosts, one of the two, half of the dynamic duo. My name is Vernon Muhammad. And the other end of the line, we have my good brother. I'll let him introduce himself.
Yes, sir. Good brother, Brother Kamos Muhammad right here with you. Peace and blessings to our family out there.
Peace and blessings right back to you and to everyone else. When you hear the music, you know what time it is. How are you feeling today, Brother Kamos?
Brother, I'm feeling inspired and wonderful this evening and happy to be here on the show so we can discuss some of the most important topics about what's going on, finance, and it's because there's no romance without finance.
You're doggone right. Let's put first things first. That's the general theme of this show. We like to talk about things that we all enjoy, the sweeter things in life and what we all hope to get to in our dreams and aspirations, but you won't get there until you pay your dues, until you do what you got to do, until you make sure that you handle your business first. So economics and finance is first and foremost. That's what we want to draw everybody's mind back to. I'm sorry if you thought this was going to be a show about relationships and romance, but we're getting down to business. So welcome. Please pass the word on that we are live and on the air right now. We also have our good friend, Sister Gidget Muhammad, on the line with us. Sister Gidget, peace and blessings to you, too.
Assalamu alaikum to both of you, Brother Kamos and Brother Vernon, and thank you for having me as a standby listener. I'm just listening and learning, and I'm just so honored to have both of you on the network. So thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. I tell you what, we're going to take a little bit of time before we get into our show and our topic, because you know we have a whole 90 minutes. We'll be here till 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central. So we're going to take our time and get into it, find out a little bit about current events. What is going on in your neck of the woods, Brother Camos? I know you got something else coming up tonight, don't you?
Well, yes, sir. We can't stop the movement of what's going on. We know we're coming up very fastly and very steadily to a great day, which is the Holy Day of Atonement, the anniversary of the Million Man's March. We know that's coming up very soon, and I've been invited to be a part of a panel or on a show this evening on the Final Call radio broadcast coming out of Morgan State University, WEAA Radio, to discuss some information and topics about the history of the Million Man March, and in particular about the nine ministries in the Ministry of Trade and Commerce. And so we know that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, we're all waiting to hear that wonderful address that we know he'll be delivering to us very soon in Charlotte, North Carolina. And as we look back over the years and the different things that have transpired and happened coming up to this Million Man's March, we know that and note that the minister is concentrating on economics. He's concentrating on finance. He's concentrating on what we must do to survive as a people going forward in terms of economic reality. So, brother, I'm looking forward to that. And that makes what we're doing here even more special because of the anniversary of the Million Man March. And hopefully everybody will be coming into tune in oneness with what the minister is saying and what's going on and what we're doing in trying to unite our people and to raise ourselves up from the current conditions that exist into a better way of life.
No doubt about that. No doubt about that. October 14th is the date. That's a Sunday. If you're road trip ready, please do your best to make it down there. And the title of the day, the theme of the day is entitled Muhammad's Economic Blueprint, Ending Poverty and Want. And you know, you've heard the saying, love is in the air, right? Well, for the last year, the whole I don't want to say stench. Give me a better word than stench. The pleasant scent of economics and business is in the air, and over and over and over again in my head has been echoing those words that we heard in October of 2011. Business is warfare, and if you haven't realized it, we are at war. So this is definitely a time to think about all the things that you can enjoy yourself with and enjoy yourself as you go through the process. But it's a serious time, you know. Business is not a joke. Business is not it is a game. You have to learn the rules of the game so that you can win the game, but you play the game to win, so it's definitely serious. And it's something that not enough people put on the front burner and in their forefront. So I felt compelled almost, you know, when it hit me what to name this show, the title of this particular episode that we're doing now, Assets versus Liabilities, it really hit me like a ton of bricks, because my mind went back to Robert Kiyosaki about 12 years ago. I was introduced to his book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. A lot of you who may have heard of that book, you know that he came to notoriety one day on the Oprah Winfrey Show. She had him on, and you know how the Oprah touch goes. Once you get your book featured in Oprah's book club, you're golden from then. But I happened to catch that or see a clip of that, went out as soon as I could, got the book, and it was a total re-education on how people in general think about money, their approach to money, and their approach to business. Most of the time, you know, people live from left hand to right hand, or, you know, we're used to doing things like robbing Peter to pay Paul, and who knows whatever other sundry practices that people have under their belt. But it's very serious business when you start to think about exactly what is the right thing to be doing with my money and how can I best put my money to work for me as opposed to me being in the rat race like we talked about last week and me chasing dollars. So assets versus liability is going to be a great topic, a great discussion. I think that we're going to have some really serious fun with that this evening. We got a couple of callers who are calling in. That's good. And, hey, Brother Camos, one of our callers, I don't know if this is a setup or what, but one of our callers is named Lunchbox85. We're going to bring you in probably in the second half hour, Lunchbox, but I'm interested to find out what you got to say. He's got his hand raised already. Hold on, hang in there with us, and we're definitely going to make sure that we bring you into the conversation. I'll be opening up the chat room in about a couple of seconds, so for those of you who have tuned in online, if you refresh your screen, you'll probably be able to see the chat room, check on in, open up, you know, greet everybody who's there, and get yourself ready for the conversation.
Yes, sir. Brother right. Vernon, yeah. You know, as we're reflecting now and talking about and getting ready to move into the subject of this evening, I was thinking about, and so I actually went to look for something out of course, the historic book, Message to the Black Man by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And I'm looking at, paraphrasing a quote that he said, that my people suffer want in the midst of plenty. We suffer want in the midst of plenty. And so, you know, this topic about finance and assets and liabilities, about business, about money in general and our usage of it and or misuse of it certainly is an important topic that can be discussed in various matters, and it's something that we really need to put in the forefront today. You know, we look at our current condition as a people. We look at the current condition on the world scene. We note that what's going on all over the planet, where people are now wanting and desiring more in the way of freedom. People are looking and desiring more in the way of economic development, of securing themselves financially, of ensuring that our families have what they need. And certainly the planet itself offers everything enough in abundance for everyone to have something. The question, of course, is why do we want in a midst of plenty? Why do we still want in a midst of plenty? Certainly in America, that is a real reality, America being a place where of abundance, you could say, economically, certainly still one of the forerunners economically on the planet, and yet so many of us want in this midst of plenty.
That's interesting. You know, I I hear people talk about how it takes money to make money, and I've heard both sides of that coin. Yeah, people who swear up and down and who claim that, hey, I can start with nothing and I'll eventually make something. And then there are some people that said that's absolutely true. You know, you definitely need to, you can't go anywhere and think that you're going to get something for nothing. You have to come up with something so that you can turn that something into even more of something. But that's something that really is very much in line with what you're saying as far as the outlook and how serious it needs to be. All around us is opportunity. You know, we're hearing news stories about how the job market is shrinking, and we're hearing news stories about how, you know, resources are drying up and everything hangs in the balance based on the election and based on who's in Congress and who wins the White House. I can't ignore, again, you know, all these sayings just stick with me and they stay in my head. I heard an interview that Robert Kiyosaki and Donald Trump did together one time a couple of years ago. I think it was in 2008 when President Obama was first running his campaign to get to the White House. They said, I think it was Trump who actually said it, doesn't matter whether the Republicans or the Democrats get into office. He said, I'm still going to be in business. You know, there's opportunity all around us. You just have to know, educate yourself, and learn the difference between the right things to do, the right places to put your money, your time, and your energy, and what is absolutely a waste of time and energy. And that reminded me, the reason I brought up Robert Kiyosaki in his book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, is because I had so much fun over the years. I think I was in a small little group, and for about 3 or maybe 4 years, We would get together every Sunday afternoon. I had so much fun with this. We'd get together in Borders Bookstore in Maryland, Largo, Maryland, at the Capitol Boulevard Center, and we would play his game, Cash Flow. You ever heard of Cash Flow, Brother Kamos?
No, brother, I'm not really familiar with that.
All right. Cash Flow is like Monopoly to the 100th degree, okay? He took this game. It's a board game, but he made it an educational game of financial literacy. Think Monopoly. You know, the whole board, the whole game, whole goal of the game is to move yourself around the board safely until you get to your next payday when you collect $200 and you can keep on moving. But the aim of Cash Flow is to move yourself around the board going from payday to payday, trying not to fall into any pitfalls. You know, there's obviously going to be some pitfalls in life. You know, you get a $200 parking ticket or whatever the case may be. There's going to be things like that that come up. But you continually run into certain opportunities. You continually run into chances to advance yourself, to grow your cash flow, to create new avenues of income. And some of them were, you know, little cheesy things, you know, started to do a Tupperware infomercial and think you're going to do something with that. And some of them were really serious ideas and opportunities that came up for people. But it basically educated you on the difference between an asset and a liability, why you need assets, and how you can rid yourself of the liabilities. And eventually, when your assets outperform your liabilities, or when you have enough assets that are producing income, which is more than that paycheck that you keep hoping to land on every time you go around the board, when your assets produce more income than your paycheck, then you've gotten yourself out of the rat race. And then you can really start to play the game of life on a whole nother level. Because people who have a certain income and have a certain mastery of this life, they play by a whole different set of rules. And that was part of the title of his book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, what the rich know and teach their kids about money that the poor and middle class don't know about. There's a whole different set of rules that people of means play by. And the goal should be for you and I who are on our way trying to get out of the rat race, fed up with this game, the goal should be to learn those rules so that we can move ourselves above and beyond where we may have been stuck for so long. But it was so great playing that game continually. I learned a lot when it came to real estate and actually securing my first home. All of that was helpful and very beneficial. So for all of you who are, you know, trying to move yourselves or figure out what the next level is, I would highly recommend you going and getting that book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, by Robert Kiyosaki. He's done a whole lot of books since then, but that's a good place to start. And like I said, because the theme is in the air, you can smell it almost everywhere you go. Economics is something that should be right at the tip of everyone's nose and just about in everybody's conversation. So that's what we're going to get more into. I'll tell you what, we are at the time for our first break. Let's go ahead and take that break because we're not too far away from the first half-hour mark. Let's take this break right here, and when we come back on the other side, we're going to hear a brief word from our sponsor, and we'll get right into our discussion. Welcome back from that break. Our sponsor, our show is brought to us today by our chief sponsor, which is Freedom Paper Company, LLC, a community company, a community business. We are a distributor of paper goods and personal paper products to include bathroom tissue, paper towels, trash can liners, just about anything residential or commercial as it relates to janitorial supplies and as well as in the kitchen, food service industry. We have quite a bit of products. We have a large selection, and in many cases, we offer superior quality at a much greater value. So check out www.freedompapercompany.com and see how we can meet your janitorial, your paper supply, your residential, your kitchen and food service needs. We got a total package that we can offer people. So check it out for yourself. All right, now let's get into this discussion on assets versus liabilities. Let me throw this out there, Brother Camos. When the average person is asked to list their assets, a lot of people, if they're a homeowner, they would list their home. You know, if they own a condo, list their condo. Some people would list their car. Some people may list their big 60-inch plasma screen TV that they have on the wall at home. Some people may even list some of the clothes they wear, some of the jewelry that they have. What's the thing that all of those have in common? I'll ask you that question, Brother Camos.
Well, the thing that all of those things have in common is that they're connected to some bill, generally, that we're paying. That's the thing that they all have in common. And, you know, Brother Vernon, if I can, what I'd like to do is really first give us a definition of assets as we begin to talk about that, and then a definition of liabilities. And for our listeners to understand that this conversation, you know, can be divided in a couple of different ways. But we can look at this certainly from an individual standpoint, and we certainly want to, by God's grace, ensure some education about some things that could help us individually. But we also have to look at the bigger dynamic of us as a community, us as a people, us as a nation. How do these things impact us? And so that first definition, asset, and this can be looked at from a couple of different ways, but we're taking this definition from a business standpoint. And so an asset is something valuable that an entity owns, benefits from, or has use of in generating income. So let me read that again. Asset, something valuable that an entity owns, benefits from, or has use of in generating income. So there's some key things there that we need to keep in mind if what we think we have are assets. And so, Brother Vernon, you mentioned things like an automobile. And so a person, based upon the definition, we can begin to decipher and really look at, is that an asset? Is even a home necessarily an asset, or is it more of a liability, which we can give a definition of that?
I've been involved in those conversations and debates before. I've, you know, had a chance to be in the middle and listen to both sides. I've heard people who said, well, your home is your number one asset. That's an asset because when the time comes, you know, you can borrow against it. You can take out a second mortgage or another loan or a line of credit based on your house. I thought that was interesting because if you break down exactly what was said, that doesn't meet the description of the definition that you just gave. You know, that's not producing income. If you have to take out a loan on something that you eventually will have to pay back, that's not income. And that's something that a lot of people don't think about. And then at the same time, when you go with cars, I've heard it said that as soon as you drive the car off the lot, it's lost 30% of its value. And depending on what the car you get is, you know, may lose more, may lose a little bit less. But over time, it turns out that a car is not really an asset. Not sure you can get use out of these things and these things can help you. But specifically for this conversation and in the context that we're talking about, an asset, chief among the things that Brother Camo said in that definition, is something that produces income. That's real critical and real key, especially in the times that we're living in now. We know that people who are, you know, stuck in the world of the J-O-B and going to the 9-to-5 for someone else, most of the time they get up earlier than they want to and they go someplace they really don't want to go to. That's why everybody's so glad when they get a day off. Most of the time they're doing stuff they really don't want to do, and in some cases they're around people all day that they really don't want to be around. But nevertheless, that's the situation that many people find themselves in. And you know, with the current economic state, the recession looming and all of the stuff that you hear on the news, a job by itself is really not enough to make it if that's what you're trying to do to get ahead. You can probably continue to make ends meet. You can probably keep yourself afloat a little bit, but the name of the game is not just to, you know, hang out and stick around. The name of the game is to win. So assets that provide additional income, that's what you want to be looking for, and that's what you want to find out how you can bring more of into your life. Now, that's the basic definition that I was given from Robert Kiyosaki when I read his book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. An asset is something that provides you with income. So that automatically says that, okay, if you had the money to buy a boat, it's not an asset. Anything that you have to make payments on is not an asset.
Yes, sir. And you know, Brother Vernon, this is really an important subject matter because I want to give the definition of liability. But, you know, we need to think about how we think about these different items that we get. We want to think about the mindset in particular of those in our community and what we do with funds, with capital, with money when we get it. These things and the understanding of the definitions of assets and liability are important, and certainly how we act and what we do. You stated early on that one of the things that Mr. Kiyosaki talks about is habits of one group of people versus the habits of others. And so in this country, America, there's a reason why some people seem to get wealthy. There's a reason why the wealth gap has continued to become larger and larger, and as it's been stated, that the haves are growing in terms of their ability to have more, where the so-called have-nots are having less and less. And so a lot of this has to do with getting clarification and understanding of definitions and what these things really mean, and the other part of it has a lot to do with our mindset, what we really think about these things, what they really mean to us. So let me read that definition, the definition of liability. A liability is a claim against the assets or legal obligations of a person or organization arising out of past or current transactions or actions. Liabilities require mandatory transfer of assets or provision of services at specified dates or in a determinable future. Let me read that one more time. A claim against the assets or legal obligations of a person or organization arising out of a past or current transactions or actions. Liability require mandatory transfer of assets or provision of services at specified dates or in determinable future. So these two definitions, when we look at them, again, using Brother Vernon, the example of, let's say, the automobile, although certainly almost all of us would like to have a nice ride. We know we like a nice ride. We know we like a comfortable ride. We know we like the comfortable ride with the nice leather bucket seats and the, you know, we know we like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. But here's the question. If we're moving to be more intelligent in terms of our usage of monies, is it more intelligent to have the nice ride, or is it more intelligent, and is it an asset, is the first question. Is it more intelligent for us to get or have or do something else that actually gives us an income or produces for us the opportunity to have an income? So, you know, we have to look at these things and look at how, you know, what's important to us and how we set importance on different things, different objects. And, you know, how does this thinking come about? Why is it that in America, just using America as an example, because we could talk about this all over the planet, but why is it that certain groups of people or certain people even in social stratospheres do certain things or act certain ways? Why is it that we rush to get the new automobile? Why is that so important to us? Why do we think that's an asset in the first place? What is the education that's being taught to us, and is it education or is it a form of miseducation that has us perpetually on the liability side? Because as the definition stated, these things require some form of payment, and as a matter of fact, the asset could be taken from us, or assets could be taken from us, or we lose, or our assets are diminished because of liabilities.
Now, that's heavy right there. You know, in the definition that you just read, the part of it that stood out in my mind was that there is a transfer of that it requires. I think you said liabilities require a transfer of assets, right?
And not only that, it said a mandatory,
wow.
transfer of assets. So, you know, when we go get that brand new Mercedes-Benz, it's going to require a mandatory payment lest we lose the asset itself altogether.
So it seems like, right, it seems like the important part about that whole scenario is not the Mercedes that you're looking to get. It's that mandatory asset that's being required of you in exchange for that Mercedes.
Exactly, exactly. And so, you know, that goes really into how we begin to analyze and look at ourselves individually, and how we begin to analyze and look at ourselves as a people, as a group, as a community, in terms of how we actually view money, how we actually view these objects that are considered by some to be assets. Are they really, or are they really liabilities? And then what is really the impact that these things are having upon our lives?
So, Brother Kamos, let's do this, right? Let's play a little game. I should bring some of the guests in. We just go back and forth between you and me. And in a little while, we have quite a few people who are on the phone line. Call us if you want to join in this discussion. We definitely appreciate you tuning in. Press number one on your phone, and when the time comes, if you have a question or a comment, I'll definitely make sure I unmute your mic and bring you in. And Lunchbox, I'm glad you're hanging in there with us. You stick in there because we definitely want to hear from you. But, Brother Kamos, this game I want to play right now. Let's go back and forth, you and me, for a minute or two, and let's just spit out what we would consider liability. Let's see how controversial we can get with this, knowing the definition of what really is an asset and knowing the definition of what a liability is. I'm going to throw one out, and then you come back and you throw one out. We just try to list all the things that we can come up with that are actually liabilities that we may think are assets. Let me see. Go. I'll start with student loans.
Well, we can very easily see that is a grand liability of great proportion. Okay.
Come on,
so I'm going to throw one out there.
Give me another asset.
Go ahead.
We only got a minute. Give me some assets.
I
got
to throw one out quick. Okay. House.
Liability.
A house.
A house. Okay. Your wedding ring that you bought from K Jewelers on the K Jeweler credit card.
Rental property.
That vacation that you had to tap your line of credit for.
Okay, let's say interest or stock ownership in a company.
That's a liability?
Well, we're throwing out items, right, to see what they are?
No.
Whether they're assets or liabilities?
No, I was asking for liabilities, all the things that we think are assets but are really liabilities.
Oh, okay. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay. Well, let me, because I threw out some assets, actually. So let me go back and say.
Yeah, get those assets back. We need those. Keep those.
The new rims on your car.
Ah, okay. The new what is it, Jumpman 23s that came out that are $300 a pair.
The latest new iPhone.
Another iPad.
Let's see. Wow, there's so many. Let me think of another one. Let's see the tinted windows.
Right. Let's throw out everything that's got to do with tricking out a car. Okay, spinning rims, the spoiler kit, the scoop on the back, all of that liabilities. Now that's interesting. You know, everything that we can go on and on because there's so many things that people get to try to either wear or floss or shine or, you know, show off that we think are assets, but in actuality they either cost us money and didn't put any money back, or they require us to continually make payments on. I had a discussion some years ago with a young newlywed. Her and her husband were thinking about buying a house. You know, they were renters, but they were in the process of figuring out what to do. Should they buy a house? Did they want to buy this timeshare that they were looking at? And I said, oh, wow, you know, you're talking about a timeshare. That's definitely a liability. I mean, it's nice you can go there on vacation and whatnot, but for the rest of your life, you know, that you have it, you're required to pay something on it. And it's not making you any money back because at the time she wasn't talking about, you know, using it to let other people go on vacation. She was just going to pay the money so that she can go on vacation. And I'm sure that when she was on vacation, she would spend even more money. So to me, the way she was describing it, that was sure enough a liability.
Yes, sir. I think it's important, Brother Vernon, that we say that there's certainly things that we spend money on for enjoyment or pleasure, and that's okay. That's, you know, we want to enjoy life, and certain things have obvious emotional meaning. So, sisters, we're not saying that the brothers shouldn't get you a nice wedding ring. We know that's very important, and we absolutely should do that, but that could actually be an asset. So, you know, we want to make sure, though, that we put that out there. It's nice to have a nice suit of clothes, but should you get a $500, $600, $800 suit of clothes versus something else, that might be more the question. And so, again, Brother Vernon, it is very important that as we're having the discussion that we keep in mind the proper mindset that we want the listeners to understand is an important thing to look at as we look at the overall big picture of what we do with money and how we handle money.
And what we do with the resources that we purchase with money. Because it's possible, you know, just like take that timeshare as an example. It could be that timeshare would cost her $400 or $1,000, $400 or $1,000 or whatever it is per year. But if she would work it right, if someone in that situation had the opportunity to work it right, then they could rent out that timeshare during times of vacation for other people and charge them more than what their expense is. If it costs $400 a year to maintain that timeshare, well, you can create a nice vacation package for another couple or somebody else for $600, and then you've turned that property, that timeshare, that arrangement into an asset for yourself because every year you are actually receiving another $200 or whatever the case may be from your ownership of that. There's always, you have to look for the way when you talk about changing the mindset as it relates to money and as it relates to what we buy with money. We got to change that mindset on what can be done with those things so that we can even turn those things into liabilities, into assets, pardon me. You don't want to turn them into liabilities, but you can turn those things into assets. And based on this discussion, what we're really trying to drive at is throw the idea out there, and hopefully it will take root in all of you who are listening, that an asset is something that will begin to produce income for you. That's the main goal. You want the asset to take care of some of your needs, not be a need in and of itself. You don't want to have to continually put out for that need, whether it's transportation, whether it's a roof over your head. Somehow you have to get yourself into a position where this thing that you are, that you have, that you're using, that you're in need of, is taking care of more than just the basics of life. You know, it's good that you have a coat that's on your back, but could you possibly, you know, rent it out to a movie set? Imagine that. You got a nice mink coat. Yeah, you should have something nice. Gee, you spent how much on that mink coat? Well, put it to work for you. When prom season, well, now you can't do it during prom season because that's, you know, it's, you don't need a mink coat in prom season, right? But I'm sure that there's someone who would rent a mink in the middle of the winter because they have a special event to go to. There you go. Put it to work for you. Insure your jewels, your diamond necklace, or whatever the case may be. And if there you go. That's a prom season rental. Something like that. Put it to work for you. That's how you use an asset.
And, yes, sir, you know, again, one of the most important things as we look beyond the individual and we look, well, let's say looking at the individual first, you know, again, there was a report that came out not too long ago, I believe, in the middle of last year that talked about the wealth gap. And some may remember that it was reported that for every $5,000 approximate income of black people, that Caucasians had well over $100,000 of wealth. That's a tremendous gap in wealth. And some of that can be directly attributed to our lack of proper usage and proper understanding of assets versus liabilities. In other words, we understand, and if we looked at it, we know that wealth is generally transferred from generation to generation. And so what we do today, individually and with our families and the things that we do in terms of our planning, is having a direct result on our children and their children and their children's children. And so why is it that sometimes if you looked at it, two persons working the same job, be it, you know, a Caucasian and be it a black person working the same job, making the same money, the Caucasian person may have more wealth. They seem to have more assets or have the ability to get more assets. It is directly because the asset transference has occurred and does occur more readily among them than it does among us. So that's one of the important. Now, if we don't understand exactly what an asset and a liability is, we might think that, you know, if we left that car, if we left that Mercedes or that BMW, we didn't have an insurance policy, God forbid, when we left this earth, that and our children inherited the car with the car note, we might think we left them something. What we left them was a liability. And so these things are very important in terms of how we look at them and getting the proper understanding, Brother Vernon, of exactly what assets and liabilities are.
And, you know, one of my favorite quotes that I've heard, this wasn't necessarily from anybody famous, but I went to see a CPA, a certified CFP, as a matter of fact, certified financial planner. And I just can't forget this for the life of me. He said, the solution to debt is increase your income. Whatever crushing need that you have, pressing need that you have as it relates to money, you know, you can play 100 million kinds of games and ways to approach it and this and that and the other, but it all boils down to increase your income. Acquire those assets which will eventually pay for the things that you want. Okay, the assets are typically the things that you need that will get you the things that you want. When Robert Kiyosaki talked about how he and his wife wanted to make a move, I think they wanted to, what was it that they wanted to do? His wife wanted to buy some very, very expensive car. She wanted that. And I think they were, you know, well enough to be able to go and buy that. But their rule was they don't spend money out of their pocket. If they spend money out of their pocket, what they put their money into is assets that will produce the money. So she ended up, for the same amount that she probably would have spent on this very expensive car, she bought herself a small apartment building, and that apartment building and the rents that she got from that apartment building produced enough profit so that she could eventually or that so that asset could eventually afford to buy her the car that she wanted. I thought that was interesting, and that mindset is the mindset that I hope that more and more and more of us and our listening audience and more people in our community get themselves into, because that introduces us to a whole new world. And when we start to talk about assets and when we identify assets, that's where the education begins, because then we'll probably start getting into some things that we're really not generally familiar with, but we need to get familiar with, things like stocks, shares. I'm not necessarily talking about going to Wall Street and investing in this, you know, the system that we see crumbling all around us. But imagine if you or you within your family or within your community, people in your community could get together and begin to formulate businesses and start to put resources and put money into those types of ventures. That would be a true asset, because then you are putting something into something that primarily is yours, is right in the center of you and your circle, and everybody that you're involved with benefits from the well-being of that. So if you think wisely and you look and you educate yourself on how to tell a good deal from a bad deal, then you can start to see where the true assets are around you all the time. Start to put your money in the right place, and then you'll see that, oh, now I have things working for me, as opposed to me spending so much of my time and energy and resources working and never seeming to get enough of what it is I'm looking for. So that's something that we want to make sure that comes across. And in the next minute or two, what I'm going to do is open up the phone lines, because I definitely am curious to find out who Lunchbox 85 is and what this person thinks is an asset or liability. So, Lunchbox, your microphone is hot. Introduce yourself to the audience. Yes,
hi,
how you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Answer this question for me, if you would, please. Is your name really Lunchbox?
No, it's a nickname a friend gave me about a decade ago.
All right. Well, welcome to the No Romance Without Finance show.
Well, when I was going through Blog Talk, I noticed your page, because I'm trying to start a business, and I'm going to be honest right off the bat. I am permanently disabled.
Okay.
Which the system pretty much holds you down pretty tight when you're on Social Security. There's not many ways to get out of it. Mm-hmm. They say they have options, but they're not. They really don't work. So I took it upon myself that I'm a skilled computer technician. I have been for years, and I was wondering how I would go about creating a business that I could start up from home. It would be a remote repair business. I could fix your computer from anywhere in the world. It's a booming economy right now. It's a booming field. But I was wondering how much liability I'm looking at here, being that, to start off, it would just be me and just the amount of time it would take to actually construct a company that would be self-sustaining with competent employees and things of that nature.
Got you. Now, repeat the last thing that you said. You said if it would just be you, what?
Well, I obviously, since I'm on Social Security, I don't have much money to start this up. But I was wondering what kind of liability I'm looking at, and how, is it worth basically me going through that much effort, years and years of trying to build this, where it very well could fail because there's so many people doing it, and then I would like the company to be self-sustainable, where I wouldn't have to work so much and I'd have competent employees. Is there a lot of liability issues when it comes to starting a business from home, from scratch?
There could be. Depends on what business it is you're trying to start. You'd have to know a little bit something about that industry. And if you don't have all the answers to what it takes to get started, one thing I could recommend, a lot of things come to mind in what you said, you know, and I'm very thankful for your question. I'll throw something out there, and then I'll let my partner Camos weigh in on it as well. If you can get in contact with the Small Business Administration and find out how would be the best way to go about orchestrating your affairs and, you know, getting yourself into position so that you're ready to do business with that, there may be some resources that are at your disposal that you may not have thought of. And considering that you're talking about, you know, going it alone and just what you can do on your own, there may very well be some resources that you can tap into when you formulate the right type of entity to do your business through. I heard you say that you're disabled. There may very well also be some opportunities for assistance for Americans who are doing business, Americans with disabilities who are doing business. That's another avenue to look into.
I have been trying to look into that. It's not an easy process. They do not make it. When I told you when they get you in the system, they lock you in. They say that there's openings for you, but the holes you have to jump through are just ridiculous. Also, being that I have no decent income, I can't afford a loan. If I could get a loan to start this up, my life would be 10 times easier.
Right.
I could take this off inside of 3 months and start and make it a working business.
That's become a common thing in America that, and I'm sure that most people would go for that option. If they can just get a quick loan, if they can get a line of credit, if they can, you know, find somebody to sponsor or fund the operation, then, you know, problem solved. That would you're right. That really would take care of just about everything that you need. Another thing that you said that brought to mind some of the things that we talked about in this conversation and some of the things that we'll get into in a little while is the fact that you're looking at how much you can do just on your own. Now, at this stage of the game, you know, you're all you got, and you're working and you're trying to do what you have to do to get the dollars or to get whatever resources that you want to come to you. And even though you may have a limited amount that you're working with, what we're hoping to do with this show is guide people and show people the world of assets and what you can put your money into, not necessarily telling you what to put your money into. We are not certified financial planners or anything like that. I'm not trying to tell anybody what to do with their money. But instead of you trying to do all the work yourself, there may be a possibility that you can put your money behind assets that will bring more of the resources that you need to you. And then you can put yourself into a better position to do what you need to do. One thing that I've learned recently within the last year, no matter what the difficulty, no matter what the obstacles that stand in the way, it's never a done deal. You know, the constant question in your mind has to be, how am I going to attack this? You know, there's got to be a way. I know that there are very accomplished and well-to-do people who have had to overcome insurmountable odds to reach success, whatever success looks like for them. But I know that you can do it, and I know that if you dig hard enough and if you maneuver yourself enough, you can find some great resources out there. You may not have found them yet, but keep on looking, because I know that there's something out there that will be a perfect match for you and your situation. And once you find that, you can leverage that and put that to work for you to help move yourself along into different, different levels of success. So, Camos, do you have anything that you could offer for that?
Yes, sir. So, tell me your name one more time, sir.
My name is Shane, sir.
Shane, yes, sir. First of all, I want to congratulate you on having a vision to go into business for yourself. Let me ask you, Have you begun to put together your business plan yet?
Yes, I have. I spent most of the last few days writing down and constructing a plan on how this the business plan would work. I also have some good people, some of the best technical firmware and web designers out in California backing me up as well. The problem is that my asset, as you keep referring to, is my asset is that I'm a very good hardware and software technical specialist. I just don't have business sense. Like I am a worker. I don't have the mindset on how to exactly to run a business from advertising, marketing, accounting, and things of that nature. And do you have any advice? Because I think that's my biggest liability, short of the fact that I do not have much startup funds.
Yes, sir. That's excellent and understood. I think one of the things that you're stating, and it's not unusual at all, most often and a lot of times, you know, many persons who go into business for themselves are what you would call the technician, meaning that, or the mechanic, somebody who knows how to do a particular task or has a particular skill set, but they often don't have some of the other very necessary and viable components needed to actually run a business. And that's okay. The fact that you know the mechanics and or the technical aspects of the particular kind of business that you're looking to go into is absolutely a great asset and really for you one of the most important things. So you can gather the other parties or the other pieces, to assist you. In other words, you can bring in and look for an accountant who can help you look at really the financial aspect of starting up this business. You in your business plan, one of the things you'll have to do is you'll have a financial component where you actually look at what it will actually cost you to run this business. One of the good things I'm hearing, and I think it's well noted, that in one of the biggest at-home businesses happens to be things that are online-based, and that seems to be, as you stated, one of your strengths. So if you look at, and you mentioned it early on, that a lot of companies are out here doing this kind of thing, if you begin to do some research directly on those companies, the types of services they're offering, how they offer those services, and you talked about what liabilities you may face in terms of actually doing the business. If you do some research on the competition, if you will, and what others are currently doing in the marketplace, that will help you to be able to position yourself in your new business and offer something unique or different to the public that puts you in a position to gain customers. Sometimes if we don't have all of the necessary liquid assets, there are a number of ways we can go and get additional assets to add to whatever we have, but certainly the advent of growing a customer base is one of the big things. In other words, you have to sell your service. People have to get to know your business and know you're out there and then look for you and come to you and become your customers. That's a big way. Now, I'm not sure, and surely you're the expert on this, so you know if there are particular softwares or exactly how you would go out
My guy in California is great when it comes to this thing, these type of things. He's a social networking guru. He also knows exactly how to put me on top of every search site out there, Google, Yahoo, Bing, you get the idea. So I've planned those things as well to put myself out there in advertising, and I did calculate some of the costs to start the business. It's just that I cannot predict everything that it's going to cost me at this point, especially this early on.
Yes, sir. And you know what? Nobody really can do that with an upstart business. The best we can do for the most part is, number one, by having some background in the business ourselves, that certainly helps us to be able to do a forecast or to develop a financial plan in our business plan. And number two, by looking and doing some research on some existing companies that are out there in the marketplace. And some of these things are public information that you could find out. And Brother Vernon mentioned using and utilizing some of the resources that you might find, which is a very good help for finding some data through the Small Business Administration, because those statistics are kept with them in terms of all sorts of businesses and the incomes and costs of effectiveness of that. But when you do those things, you're going to be able to come up with an analysis financially and be able to then do a forecast. And you'll be able to look at a number and a variety of things to do that. Maybe even a financial planner could be helpful to you in looking at some of the financial things that will come about as a result of opening and starting a business. But it sounds like you are well on the way. You have a lot of things in your favor, actually, to start it. Seems like the biggest hurdle that you stated is the financial hurdle. And I think some of the things that have been mentioned here, if you were to take hold of those, you'd be well on your way to overcoming those obstacles.
Yeah, Shane, I want to say one thing to you, maybe two things to you. One is I remember hearing from Robert Kiyosaki again, who we started this conversation talking about with. He said that, and he says continually, he says, I'm not a real smart guy. You know, I just surround myself with smart people, you know, the people with the know-how to do all the things that you want to do. Those are the ones that, those are the really the assets, the resources that you need most. I'm not going to say most, because funding is always, you know, probably top of the list. But you definitely need to surround yourself with the people who can do the things that you know you can't do. So listening to your conversation, one, tells me that you're aware enough to know exactly what you need and pull those people around you who can do that. I hear you talking about your team, and it sounds like you built a pretty good team, and you're in the process of building a good organization. That's definitely going to be critical in building the machine that you're trying to build, you know, the organization that you're trying to build. But also the fact that you're in the conversation about funding and how to get funding, that's the place that, you know, so many people never even get to. But that's like, you know, exactly where the game begins on the gridiron. You know, that's I was watching a some kind of a, what is this? They do it in Silicon Valley. I don't know if they do it every year, but it's a chance for startups to come and present themselves and present their business and their idea before some of the top venture capitalists in Silicon Valley. And I think it's a whole week, but they have that whole week to showcase their stuff and their know-how, and, you know, they have little tasks and things that they have to complete. And the little clip that I saw was just the part where they were standing in front, and they each had about 3 or 4 minutes to make a presentation before this audience of venture capitalists. But you're in the game, and that's the number one place that you want to be, moving yourself to where you can present or have someone present for you in front of these people who have the chief resource that you want and that you need. So welcome to the battlefield, my friend.
And Shane, I just want to add briefly, one of the things you can certainly look to is some micro lending. There are a number of banks who are partnered with some agencies. Some of them partner with Small Business Administration. Some of them partner with some incubators that help small businesses to grow, that you can get micro lending from. So as you look at and establish your actual financial analysis and financial plan and make the actual determination of how much you need to really get started, there's a lot of institutions that have, if you will, relaxed lending procedures and practices that will allow you to get what they call microloans. These are sums generally in and around $5,000 or maybe a little above that or below that, but somewhere in that general ballpark that you can get funding from. And again, these generally have relaxed criteria for persons to get these kinds of funds. So those, again, some ways that you might be able to readily be able to go out and get funding for your business.
All right. I'll definitely look into microloans. I want to say thank you both for hearing me out and the advice you gave me. I will take it to heart. And hopefully I will call back in, you know, in a month or two with good news for you folks.
Yes, indeed.
Definitely,
thank
Shane.
You.
Keep us up to date.
Good luck and prosperity.
All right. Well, thanks to Shane for calling in. We had a couple people in the chat room who were just weighing in on the conversation and enjoying the things that they were hearing. Welcome to the guests in the chat room. We had a couple more people who called on the line. If you're interested in joining the conversation, press 1 on your phone, and I'll bring you in if you have a question or a comment. Brother Camos, we are down to our last 25, 24 minutes, something like that. So why don't we start wrapping up and letting people know something about what we have in mind and what assets look like in our world.
Yes, sir. This is a wonderful conversation, and as we began, we started with trying to get everyone to kind of focus on looking at some tangible realities as to what things might be assets or liabilities that we're actually dealing with in our own realm and in our own world. And so when we look at these things and we understand, we keep hearing these statistics on the news media about the fact that the wealthiest people in the country are continuing to get wealthier and that the poor people are continuing to get poor. And so we have to, if we find ourselves on the latter portion of that, now the latter portion of that information, those who might be finding ourselves losing the ability or losing finances, not seemingly coping with the increasing difficulty of having to make pace in the financial arena or in the world today, we have to ask ourselves, how do we deal with this? Now, this can be looked at, again, from an individual standpoint and certainly from a collective standpoint, because we know that unified effort is one of the ways that will help us to overcome a lot of difficulties. Now, if we find ourselves in a position where we don't have readily assets to, or that is financial capital to go into business for ourselves or to put money into a situation where that money can grow, then we have to look at devising a way to come together with other people or other organizations or entities that have a common interest or common purpose that we might have to enable ourselves to gain capacity. That's certainly something that we can do. The other thing we have to do as individuals is look at where do we want to be in the next 5 years, or let's say even the next 2 years, the next 5 years, the next 10 years. If we have children, what do we want their future to look like? We know in and among our community, the black community, it is often said that, unfortunately, we start over and over again at the beginning, meaning that the generations that come down the line don't necessarily or quite often do not walk into or have as a benefit that which their forebearers have done for them. They're not businesses left for them to walk into and be able to generate new capital and new growth and to move forward. They're not oftentimes assets left in terms of monies, even insurance policies or any of these things left. So what do we do? What are some of the things that we can begin to look at that are real tangible assets that we can put our money into? And one of the big things, Brother Vernon, we have to understand is that this may take some sort of sacrifice. This may take us giving up maybe that big screen TV that we wanted that's not an asset that loses and depreciates or loses its value very quickly. Or maybe we don't get that brand new car this year because we take our money and put it somewhere that has the capacity to do what an asset does, which is to grow income for us. And so certainly one of the ways that Freedom Paper Company is enabling people to do this is because we have a wealth creation and wealth circulation program. And one of the biggest components of that, now, Brother Vernon, you said something very important early on, which is that when people often think about investing, and we need to break this down a little bit, because everybody is not necessarily one who has invested and doesn't necessarily understand what investing is. But to put it simply, to make an investment is to put something into something else that hopefully will grow for us and then become a benefit. One of the definitions, as we read it, of an asset is that it's something that you can have that will grow in value or produce income for you. It was something that if you put something to it today, then it will grow and expand and then become worth more tomorrow. So oftentimes, when we think about investments, we think about those things that you mentioned, being stocks or bonds. We think about big corporations like, you know, Microsoft or GM or one of these big corporations, and certainly those are things we can invest in. But one would be very careful when we think about the stock market and how it has gone up and down. So we might not look or feel necessarily secure in dealing with something like that. But there are also companies, such as Freedom Paper Company and others, who are privately owned companies who are in the marketplace who offer the opportunity for persons to own a piece of the company. You could actually own a piece of Freedom Paper Company by becoming a profit share owner or a member of the company and therefore owning what is called units in the company. You can own a piece of the company. Now, this is how this works. Everyone has heard of Microsoft. Well, Microsoft was not always the big mega giant that we know it to be today. It had a beginning, as all companies do. And let me say this, Brother Vernon, because this is very, very important, that most companies start with investment. In other words, they start with individuals or entities putting money up or into this corporation or this company because they believe or have a hope and knowledge that something that they're doing will have a benefit and growth potential beyond where they are today. So many of us and most of us, if we had the opportunity to put some money in Microsoft today, we would certainly do that because we know what Microsoft is doing today. But in its beginning, when Microsoft began back in around 1976, well, the computer age that we know today didn't exist in the same light. And so Microsoft was looking for people to believe in it and invest in it as a company. That's 1976. This is 2012. So if we looked at a cursory history of that, it would reveal that Microsoft in its first year made in and around $16,000. Now, most people today, if you were there in 1976, and again, the computer industry wasn't what it is today, and here was Bill Gates and some others and the other founders of Microsoft talking about this concept, this idea, and asking you to invest in it. Well, many of us wouldn't have invested in that, especially noting that it only made $16,000 in its first year. But what about after the second year? Well, year two, Microsoft just did a little over $22,000. Again, you know, those numbers are really like a drop in the bucket. And certainly as income earners, most of us may make more than those numbers. And so it took something a little more. It took people who had some belief, who had some vision to see into what they were doing. What was Microsoft talking about? And in year three, Microsoft began to move a little swifter. It made over $300,000. And then in year four and five, they started to get up into the millions. And today, it is a giant in well over $32 billion. Well, when you look at a baby company like Freedom Paper Company, who's in an industry of huge proportion and potential, we're talking about the paper goods industry. And I would say that most of those listening today are using some kind of paper product. You're using bathroom tissue. You're using paper towels. You're using the very products that Freedom Paper Company has and are the core products of the industry. Now, if you look at us as a company and look at what we're doing, we're a little different than those that are currently in the marketplace, because we know there's some big mega companies that some are familiar with out there, and we know that there's several others. So there's some things that make Freedom Paper Company a lot different than what's currently going on. That's important. It's important to have something new when you enter into the marketplace, and we have that. And so for a very little monies, and you can go and begin to look at some of this at www.freedompapercompany.com, again, www.freedompapercompany.com, you can begin to look at some of the things that make Freedom Paper Company different. Now, what would an investment, a small investment, look like in a company with a phenomenal idea at the right time, in the right place, in the current economic stream of things that could do wondrous things? Because we are a company that is doing things that is socially conscious, conscious to people who are looking for something anew. Now, this can be anybody of a conscious sight, because one of the things that people in America are tired of in general, they're tired of the abuse of corporate America. They're tired of hearing about the rich getting richer and others not doing anything. Again, I stated, Freedom Paper Company is built upon a system of wealth creation and wealth circulation. Our motto and our corporate structure and our foundation is one where everyone who is a supporter and engaged with this company can benefit. And so you can invest a small amount in Freedom Paper, and just like Microsoft did in over just a few years, it began to become a mega-sized company. We're looking at doing that very same thing. And so an investment of this sort is an asset. It's something that can grow. It's something that you put some money into today and you don't worry about it. Now, this is not for persons who are going to be worried about, well, I put a few dollars here and it's been 1 month. What's going on? If you are overly concerned like that, this might not be for you. And certainly, this is for people who have the ability, or groups. Again, we said that when you look at the concept and the ideas of Freedom Paper, you'll know right away that this is absolutely something you should do. So if you can't do it on your own, there are ways and mechanisms that groups of persons can come together in order to pool their resources to make this investment, because Freedom Paper Company is growing by leaps and bounds. And if you look at some of the statistics that we will present to you, for those who are interested in this opportunity, you're going to be able to get a financial prospectus that enlightens you and gives you the information and data you need to know what you're doing. We don't want individuals coming in as investors who are not knowledgeable about what they're doing. And so really, as required by law, we're giving you an investment prospectus that you will get. You're able to look at the company. You're able to look at the viability of the company. You're able to look at the risk involved, because there's a risk in all companies. No one knew in 1976, in 1977, in 1978 that Microsoft in 2012 would be this billion-dollar giant. Nobody knew that. But there's a shift going on, a new paradigm of economics. And that new paradigm of economics, as stated by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, is one in which the individuals, that's the average person, we need to be owners of companies that we consume from. We need to be those who have an ownership stake in companies today. And Freedom Paper Company is offering those kinds of opportunities. Doesn't it make sense to own a piece of a company that is providing a product that you buy regularly? Just think about it. Every time you buy from Freedom Paper Company, a company that you're invested in, you're getting something back. You're building your investment in a company that has the capabilities to give you money back, to enrich your life, to enrich the lives of our children from generation to generation. That's what this is. This is not something we're just doing today, but this is an institution that is being built that enables wealth to be created that lasts generation after generation, And that is a true asset. Brother Vernon?
Brother Kamos, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, I don't know what happened to Brother Vernon, but let me ask you a question.
I'm sorry, y'all. I had the mute button pressed. I'm sorry.
Going back to the young man who called Shane, what would you suggest since Brother Vernon mentioned how the job market is shrinking so, what would you suggest for those people who are jobless and they've been jobless for a long time? So when we talk about economic development within our community, what would you suggest for those people who have just not been able to find anything in the job market?
Well, the reality, Sister Gidget, is that is going to happen and occur at a continuing alarming rate. If the politics of this country continue to be what they are in relation to shipping jobs more and more off and out of this country, if, in fact, corporations continue to trim back in, if companies look at the bottom line and the ridding themselves of employees as the way to maximize profits, then the jobless market will continue to grow. And so that's a real issue. Well, the answer to that does become self-reliance. Shane said he was a disabled person, and yet he had a skill. And so one of the things that is recommended is that for persons who have now become disenfranchised in the way of being wage earners, to look at their particular assets and begin to look at how they can maximize those assets in terms of skill sets to begin to develop businesses. Now, you know, they're all different kinds of businesses and all different sizes, but certainly this is a viable way for anyone to begin to build and to bring income into their circumstances. And so, number one, I would suggest people really take a look at what they can do and some of the viable things that they have right at their fingertips that they can immediately begin to utilize in the marketplace. A number of businesses have exactly started, Sister Gidget, because of the reality of the joblessness that exists in America today. The business growth has really increased tremendously in America just because of that. So going into business is a viable asset. But as Shane said, there are things that are necessary for one to know, things he mentioned that he didn't know, but these things can be learned, and it's very important to put together that business plan, which is a key asset to looking at the total circumstances that one may find himself in terms of going into business. But also keeping in line with what we're talking about, it's putting ourselves in a position in various means as well that even as we may be growing a business or we even if we have a job that we're working, because that's not guaranteed today, we need to put monies in places that potentially have the ability to grow and become valuable for us, become assets for us that we can then look to for future needs as they come along. And this is why people invest. This is why things like mutual funds and things of that nature became popular, because we have to understand that money has to work for us in a veritable stream of different ways. We can't have our money in just one place. We need to maximize the usage of money in various means.
Okay, so if one wanted to invest in Freedom Paper Company, so to speak, then how much money would they need for an investment?
That's an excellent question. And, you know, one of the things that we looked at early on, again, this is a private company, we look at $50 a unit, which is the proper terminology with an LLC company. And so $50 a unit, or to make it easier, a share, is what one needs. Generally, the least amount is 25 shares, which would be $1,250. However, we're doing something unique and special for the next 90 days. We, because of the economic reality of what's going on, and because we've got a lot of emails and had a lot of people call us, they're very interested, they like what we're doing, they want to be a part of the economic freedom movement, they want to be a part of what Freedom Paper Company is doing. For the next 90 days, we're offering the opportunity for a person to come in at as little as 12 shares or units. And so that's about $600. And so for as little as $600, a person can begin to invest and become a part of or a member of Freedom Paper Company and then begin to have that money work. Now, again, just to get you, I just want to throw out some numbers. We're looking at an industry that with just one product and a multitude of products, and that one product, we just looked at bathroom tissue alone. And just to state this, there's several types of bathroom tissue. But if we looked at what we would call, you know, a standard type of bathroom tissue, one that we all commonly buy and use in our homes, just that alone, just in the United States, is generating income above $2.4 billion a year. $2.4 billion a year, one product line in a product that is numerous in a line of product itself. So if we think about that, then we can begin to picture what a small investment of just $600 could do for us in just a few years as being owners and stakeholders, owning a piece of a company and buying even the product that we consume on a regular basis. We can begin to see what the growth potential could be for us personally if we became investors in Freedom Paper Company.
Now, this is a great conversation. This is a wonderful conversation. We're approaching the end of the broadcast. We really have about 3 minutes and 20 seconds or something like that left. So just wanted to make sure that everybody knew where we stood. We didn't want to run out of time. For those of you who are tuned in, we want to thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. And please be sure to go and visit our website. It's www.freedompapercompany.com. Check out what our mission is, what our intent is, and what our vision is. And go over to our contact us page, drop us a line, put your information in. And if you have a question, if there's anything else that you're wondering as it relates to this particular discussion or as it relates to specifically the profit-sharing opportunity that Freedom Paper Company has, drop that line in there. We'll be sure to get back to you.
And, Brother Vernon, it's very important that the listeners know that this is an opportunity for everyone. Freedom Paper Company is a socially conscious company. What does that mean? That means we are interested in community. We're interested in the planet. Our products and the things that we do are what you would call, as many know, the term green friendly. We're interested in the planet. There's a difference in paper products. There's virgin paper and there's recycled paper and such, and that's a whole other conversation. But just to state this, if you're using a virgin paper product, understand that the usage of that product is depleting the very important need that we have in green and trees, which, of course, provides the oxygen that we need to breathe. And so there are those who understand that. There are movements out there that in particular are green movements. Well, Freedom Paper Company is a company you should invest in because we are about saving our planet. We are about the green movement. If you are a person who is important to you that our children are educated, you're looking at the dismal educational system and what's going on in education in this country. Well, Freedom Paper Company has programs and organizational incentives that directly benefit schools. See, we're about what's important and what should be important to all of us because we understand that those are assets as well. Our children are assets for our future. The planet is one of the greatest assets that we have because obviously if the planet comes to demise because of our abuse of it, none of us can survive. So Freedom Paper Company is again a company that all of these things are necessary and needed. Again, www.freedompapercompany.com. Take a look at us.
All right. Thanks so much for that. Thanks for joining us and tuning in. We appreciate you being with us on the No Romance Without Finance show. We are about our business, and business is, in fact, serious business. So tune in next week. We'll have something good for you. Take care of yourself. Assalamu alaikum, peace, and God bless.